Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the 343 Podcast, where we work tirelessly to elevate the level of discourse and practitionership here in American soccer. Today's episode is a cross-post from when I was a guest on Kirk Kinsey's own show called The Counter Press Podcast, which you can check out. We'll have all those details in the show notes. He called me up, invited me to the show. I, of course, said yes. Kirk, as you may recall, was a guest himself on the 343 Podcast back in episode 323. He is a practitioner in the game, and so naturally, those are the folks that I want to speak to. We covered a bunch of stuff on this one. It just so happened to be the day right after Greg Berhalter was removed from being the U.S. men's national team coach. And so you get our immediate reactions to what that means, what it was, how we see it, and so much more. It's a can't-miss episode if you do not care about the U.S. men's national team and you are in American soccer. You probably should care about the U.S. men's national team, because what happens at those levels trickles all the way down to, if you're at the youth level, down to your seven-year-old kid. And believe me, it does impact all the way through the ranks. So make sure that you're up to speed on what is happening at the highest of levels here in American soccer, because how they regulate the game there has total impacts on the rest of the pyramid. If you don't know those impacts, it's going to be really tough for you to make good, informed decisions for whatever it is that you happen to be doing. All right, let's jump into the episode. But before we do that, as you all know, nobody sponsors this episode. We do not allow sponsors on this episode. We don't want to be beholden to anybody in what it is that we say and how it is that we do our work and our art. So we sponsor ourselves. If you are a coach, you need to check out 343coaching.com. We've got free and premium programs for you there, based, mind you, on a depth and richness of American soccer development expertise that does not exist anywhere else in the country. So make sure you go ahead and pick up that methodology and implement it with your teams. It's going to catapult you to a completely different realm of capabilities. If you're a parent, make sure you go to 343masterclass.com. God knows it's important for us to continue developing our level of discernment in the labyrinth, the maze that is American youth soccer. So you as a parent, you need to help your kids as best as possible. Again, 343masterclass.com is where you need to go. And if you happen to be coaching the little ones in the 7v7 format, we've got you covered as well. For that, you go to 7v7coaching.com. Okay, let's dive in. Hope you enjoy. Hope you gain a whole bunch of gold nuggets, because I believe what's dropped here in the episode with Kirk Kinsey, there's plenty to go around. And if you'd like to follow up with me personally, make sure you can just hit me up at 343 there on X, or you can email me. Feel free to email me directly, gary@343.com. All right, here we go. As I was saying offline moments ago, I want to do more of these as I possibly can. And when you reached out, I said, absolutely, because I know you're a good guy and want to see soccer succeed for everybody. And I think that piece right there for everybody is key to what I think our discussion is going to be centered around.
Yeah, absolutely. So again, thanks so much for coming on. We are like an hour past U.S. Soccer didn't announce it. They just leaked it through Doug McIntyre that Greg has been fired. So there's jubilation in USMNT Twitter and corners of the internet. I think, though, Gary, you and I both see the problem with the Federation and the U.S. men's national team is larger than Greg. Would you say, like, what are your thoughts around all that?
Sure. Greg is an employee. Somebody hired Greg.
Yeah.
And somebody hired the person who hired Greg. So if we are unsatisfied with Greg himself, I think it's important to ask deeper questions as to why was he hired in the first place? Who did the hiring in the first place? Who did the rehiring, which was 10 times worse than the original hiring?
And why?
And then keep going up that chain of command, if you will. And I think that would do a lot of good for raising the level of the American soccer fan base, because they'll get to see more of the machinery and what the incentives in the system are. And not to be derogatory in any way, but
since I've been in the game for a very long time, Argentine American. My parents, my extended families are all from Argentina. From being a little kid at the dinner table, you would hear these sorts of issues and discussions cropping up around the Argentine national team coach or the German national team coach, international football in general. That's been with me since I was a child, and the scrutiny and the scrutinizing and then the digging deeper. And I think the American fan base is on its way to having those discussions as well. And I think this is a good learning moment with Greg Berhalter, and I hope it doesn't go to waste, Kirk.
Yeah.
I hope that with the announcement that Greg is now gone, that just doesn't paper over the deeper issues and pacifies the fan base. Although if that's all that we get out of this, the silver lining should be, I think, that the fan base realizes that the Federation/MLS responds to public perception, that the fan base does indeed have a voice and they can't just be bullied.
Yeah, this is something new that we've been doing on this show. Normally, we talk about LAFC, and we started having some conversations around the U.S. men's national team before Copa America. Like, after the 5-1 Colombia loss, we came on, had a guest, and talked about it. And he and I were wondering what it would take for U.S. soccer to fire Greg. And I was like, I don't even think they would, even if we failed to get out of the group, which at the time seemed, even after that loss, seemed wild, right, that you wouldn't get out of the group. I had said, I don't think they will. I think they'll get out of the group, they'll lose in the quarters, and U.S. soccer will be like, that's good enough. It keeps the butts in seats. It keeps everybody pacified. It's like a very conservative approach to running the whole program. So I agree. I think the amount of pressure that they faced is something new. I mean, even like Tim Howard is out there saying, I'm going to go track down Jurgen Klopp and beg him to come coach, right? I don't know that I've ever seen anything like that with U.S. soccer and U.S. fans. Have you, or do you feel like that's something new?
I think it is something new, because I think what the Federation/MLS, and we'll get into why I know, I was going to say I think, but I know that USSF is just an MLS puppet, basically. I think what they've done a very good job at is making the fan base in general feel like they are absolutely powerless, that their voices don't really matter. They've done a really good job at that. So I'm hoping this is a turning point and that the fan base realizes that's not true. And when they see other issues, that they will again have this level of intensity and passion to drive change, because they are the key, Kirk. The fans are the key. And you've seen it. Your rival franchise in the area is the LA Galaxy.
Right.
And, you know, they've had many years of, I mean, less than mediocrity, I would say. And it took the fan base and the supporter groups to rise up to finally clean house and fire everybody who had been in charge of the franchise up until then.
Klein out, so, right? And pretty big, notable protest from them, which is something you don't typically see in MLS. Yeah.
Indeed. So hopefully this cycle, this education cycle, is about that, that the fans do have power.
Yeah. So again, this is like the first battle of many, and the fans have won this one, right? The battle of the Greg Wars, if you want to call them that. So you kind of alluded to it already, but I really want to get into like why MLS and USSF are so tied together, how we know that they are, and how that affects the game. I think for me, as somebody who like runs a youth club where I live, when people find out the level at which MLS and USSF hold back their kids, when people find that out locally and they can finally put those threads together, that's when people get pissed, is when they find out. So I live in Arizona, right? Northern Arizona. You mean my kid, my 10-year-old kid, owned by RSL, and somebody would have to pay RSL to go get him? Like, when they find out about that kind of stuff is when they get pissed, and the Federation lets them do it. So I don't want to steal your thunder, but I feel like once people figure this out, it gives them a little bit of like space to actually think about, oh my God, like MLS does some shady things in all areas of the game here in the US, and they really do gatekeep things in ways that you might not understand.
Yeah, well, I think you said it quite perfectly. You need to really take it down to the level of, I mean, if you're a parent with a kid, you have to take it down to that level. If you're a fan, you have to take it down to the specific fan perspective. If you are a small business who might sell merchandise, you have to take it to their locale, so on and so forth. And so there's all these different demographics that require different levels of education and different sort of examples to wake people up. And I think you nailed the most important one when it comes to children and their opportunities growing up or lack thereof. We can reserve promotion relegation for later if you like, but I think that what's important to consider is that the United States Soccer Federation, aka USSF, aka US Soccer, is supposed to be the governing body presiding over the entire American ecosystem.
Right.
And they are supposed to be representing all of their constituents with that power as the regulator. And their constituents being local youth clubs, amateur clubs, semi-pro clubs, pro clubs, men and women, referees, you name it, any touch point in the ecosystem, they are supposed to be looking out for one way or the other. And for far too long, it's been very evident to some of us, to many of us in many cases, that they aren't doing that, Kirk, that what they're doing is looking out for the best interest of Major League Soccer at the detriment of all others. And so what's happened here is that they've managed to accrue all power to Major League Soccer, and then everybody else is kind of fighting for scraps. And it leads to the situation of them being able to hire somebody with Greg's credentials instead of going after a true international manager. Because again, the people who work in the federation, whether it be Cindy Cohn or Batson or whoever's on the board or youth national team coaches, assistant coaches, scouts, you name it, if you have a position in US soccer, you don't want to cross MLS. Because since MLS is a monopoly, if you want to continue a career path at an appreciably high level in the United States, well, after you're done with US soccer, what is there for you? Well, MLS, whether it be MLS Next, whether it be MLS Academies, whether it be a franchise at the pro level. And so everybody is very careful and cautious. And so their incentives are aligned with doing MLS's bidding, Kirk. And that's where we're at.
Yeah, no, I mean, this is the crux of the problem, right? Is USSF will bend to MLS whenever it has to in order to keep them happy. And it doesn't all have to be with like nefarious intentions. I think oftentimes everybody's just kind of like, look, we're trying to grow the game. MLS has been around for, like, we've had a stable league for 26 years now. Like, can't you just be happy? You can't. And it's like, well, I am happy about that. Like, that is a good thing. But it doesn't mean that you have to slow everything else down or make everything else beholden to MLS. So again, drilling down to like my lane where I am is now that there's like MLS Next Pro and MLS Next, whatever the league is that all the youth teams participate in, right? When MLS comes in and chooses a club, not based on this, going back to your promotion relegation and like an open pyramid thing, based on club size or whoever they know at that club, oftentimes it's arbitrary. Most of the time it's just they have 10,000 kids in the club and it's like, boom, ominous dominus, you get an MLS Next team. That kills all the other youth clubs because any talent that they have now has to go to that club. And you say, well, they're providing an opportunity. They're providing a pathway to MLS. And then I say, yeah, but are they? So again, in my case, if I have a kid go from my team in Flagstaff to Phoenix Rising, who has an MLS Next team, is RSL really coming down from Salt Lake and scouting that player and giving him a shot at a Division One, like a first division spot with their actual team? No, they're not. That kid's not going to their first team. He's not. And so it's like this artificial scarcity that MLS creates to drive the valuations of their franchises higher. And everybody else is just kind of stuck wondering, well, how do I get my kid there? What do I have to do to get my kid seen? And so we all just kind of build these Frankenstein clubs and leagues on the backside to try and keep up. But ultimately, it's a bit futile, right? Like it doesn't really matter.
And the incentives get misaligned. So that, say that kid goes to an MLS Next club, Phoenix Rising in this case. I mean, once that club has status, league status, and they can't lose the league status, yep, the performance on the field or development or whatever good things you want to mention, then the incentive there isn't aligned with excellence, Kirk.
Right.
Isn't aligned, yep, with doing the best possible job for the development of that player, the development of the institution from the sporting perspective. And so they might have left you, they might have left another club. That's what they're going to. at that point. So it's all window dressing. It's all brand-based, and it's all self-fulfilling as well, because then that's the pool of players from whence they pick the youth national teams. That's the pool of players from whence they make homegrown players. And then they market it as a success because, ooh, look, everybody came from MLS. Okay, well, obviously, you know.
When there's only one source, of course they do. Why wouldn't they?
So it's so weird. It's so messed up. And to linger on that point a little bit longer, U.S. soccer had at least one piece of the puzzle right in 2007, which was starting the U.S. Soccer Development Academy, which nationalized a competition. Great. They still effed up by not instantiating promotion and relegation in and out of the United States Soccer Development Academy. But table that for the moment. When COVID came around, you know, there's this expression of never get let a good crisis go unwasted, go to waste. Well, guess what? U.S. Soccer, I'm sure at the behest of MLS, decided to shut that down and give it all to MLS. They gave away the whole thing, Kirk, to MLS. And he doesn't get more naked than this.
Right, right. Well, and then I want to put a fine point on that point specifically, because Phoenix Rising, who is a USL team, right? As soon as USSF says, MLS, you're now, excuse the pun, you're now the Dons of youth soccer as well, the highest level of youth soccer that we're going to have in the country. What does Phoenix Rising do? They start an MLS team, right? To compete in MLS next. And so they're just giving it away. They're abdicating their responsibility and just saying, here, MLS, you guys deal with it. We don't want to do it anymore. And I guess the steel man there as well, MLS is going to make it grow, right? But still, what you're doing is you're giving away more and more pieces of the sport to a single entity that is already a monopoly at the Division I level and is becoming more of a monopoly across the country and even into Canada. It's really naked at this level. And I feel like the more people see it, the toothpaste will never go back in the tube. Like once you can explain it to people, they'll never go back, right?
You can't unsee it. Once you see it, you can't unsee it. And I don't blame them, man, because I just look at my history and I didn't see it either for a very long time. In 1996, I was at the Galaxy Games. I went to the Rose Bowl. I went there. I was an MLS or Galaxy fan for many, many years from the inception of the quote-unquote league. Know what was going on. And granted, that was almost 30 years ago as a kid. But even into my 20s, I was still blind. No clue. It was only when, through my work in the sport itself, when I started bumping up against a glass ceiling, where you kind of are ready to graduate and you've conquered everything there is to conquer at a certain level and you're ready for the next level. It's only when you start doing some innovative work or pioneering work or you're ready to level up that you see that there's a problem, that there's a blockade at that point. And that happened maybe 14 years ago, something like that. But it took me a good long while. Luckily, I think the dissemination of information technology has advanced to the point where it shouldn't take the general fan those sorts of experiences to see it. And luckily there are podcasts like yours and a few others that are starting to talk more and more about this. And just like with the Greg Berhalter situation and the fans flexing their power, I think there is an opportunity here whereby if the fan base reaches some sort of critical mass or critical enlightenment, for lack of a better term, that they'll be able to flex their muscles and accelerate change towards something better and away from this structure.
Yeah. Well, and I think there are pockets that are breaking through, like you said, even within like the MLS fandom, right? Where people are starting to call, I always look at it as kind of a misnomer, right? They're saying, well, the league's going to expand to 60 teams and there's going to be MLS 1, 2, and 3. It's going to have promotion and relegation. I'm always like, ooh, that's close. That's close. But promotion and relegation isn't the actual thing, right? It's an open system. That's the panacea, right? Promotion and relegation is just one mechanism within that entire system. An open system allows any club, Phoenix Rising, for example, to do something special, get promoted. And now those academy kids that were in MLS Next or, you know, whatever league that the U.S. has, now they have a legitimate first team that they play in. Even if they're just in USL 2, right? They have a legitimate first team. you could start a club in Irvine, right? You're in Irvine?
Yeah.
All right. Did I just give away that?
No, that's fine. No problem.
You could start Gary Clive and Irvine Football Club, and they would be a legitimate first team, even though they're competing in an amateur league, right? Because they're part of the actual system. But right now, that's all closed off. And again, you can steelman the argument that MLS is attracting investors and there's now money in the sport that there wasn't before because all the investments are protected. Fine. You can say that, but on the backside of that, you have to admit that you're excluding a lot of people and that what you really have is a cartel of sorts, right?
Yeah.
Where everybody's in. And that's why it's attracting all that money. And again, good. I'm glad people are going to games. I'm glad they're getting into the sport, but hopefully we can steer them into that right direction. Yeah. But
well, you can always steel man anything. I'm sure China can steel man, you know, or North Korea can steel man the reasons they do the things that they do.
Yeah.
Also, but on the money front, it's interesting, right? Because if you have an open ecosystem, and it doesn't have to be soccer, it could be any system, capital flows in much larger magnitudes than a closed one because you have to compete if you want to win the market. And so if you look at RSL or Seattle Sounders or whoever, you know, there's a salary cap. But maybe some of those franchises and owners, well, the owners are billionaires with a B, they could spend a heck of a lot more than they're currently spending if they wanted to. And if they had to compete, then you have this arms race like you have in the rest of the world for the best possible product on the field at that point. So there is a larger influx of money at that point.
Yeah, no, I think that's absolutely it because... So again, if we're going to drill all the way down, I think like talking about these big topics and then drilling down onto like the specific applications of them. So take a youth club, again, Gary Clive and FC, right?
True.
You start training players. And as it is right now, LA Galaxy says, hey, you're in our backyard. These players belong to us if they want to play first division soccer. And you as the coach are like, well, yeah, I do. And I'm glad that I've trained these players properly, right? But then Galaxy never have to look at, what is Gary doing down there where now we're getting six or seven of his players and they all seem to fit. They all play a distinct style and we like the way they play, but they never give a second thought to how's that working, right? Or a second thought to maybe we should start paying Gary to develop more players, right? So that he can grow what he's doing. There's never any of that. So what you get are all these kind of hidden pockets all around the country, I think, where it's like players pop up, they're good, but the people that are training them, the systems that the coaches that are training them aren't ever being recognized and elevated, right? It's all just kind of kept there again because we have this like exclusionary system and the money never flows past that MLS next team at Phoenix Rising or wherever, right? Because those players just gravitate there because they have to.
So imagine what happens to those particular coaches or those particular DOCs or clubs, youth clubs that aren't getting recognition or elevated. Imagine what happens to their psyche and their incentive mental model when those things happen. Eventually they get jaded and they just throw their arms in the air and say, well, fuck it. Why am I doing this?
Yeah.
And then it turns into a situation where it's like, well, you know what? I'm just going to show up, you know, lay out some cones, pay me my money, and that'll be the end of it. And ultimately, the ones that suffer are the kids and the families who are paying good money for these experiences or for this training. Because, they're going to end up getting mediocre, less than mediocre efforts from those that they're entrusting. But it's not, again, it's in my opinion, it's not the fault of the youth clubs or their DOCs or their coaches that we have a situation like that. It comes from the very top.
Yeah. Yeah. And I love that point about people becoming disillusioned and either giving up or I mean, in other cases where they're lucky enough, they'll just join up, right? Well,
correct.
Can't beat them, join them. I got to feed my family. I got to keep doing this. So I'm just going to go where the money is. And then, like you said earlier, right? MLS is like, look at this. We got a successful thing, right? We got this. We built this. We did that. Right. So they just take credit where it's Don Garber tweeting yesterday. They're like, Lionel Messi's an MLS player and he's playing in the semifinal of the Copa America. It's like, bro, put down the phone. Right.
Or 14 Canadians or MLS players or former MLS players. Well, yeah, obviously you guys have monopolized everything, of course.
Yeah. Yeah.
And see what's interesting, Kirk, here is again, I'm going back to like Argentina, my roots, my experiences there, or overseas, Spain, Holland, you name it, Holland, Portugal. You're allowed as a journalist or as an individual or as a coach or anybody in the ecosystem as a has skin in the game, you're allowed to criticize hard over there because it's not monopolized. So if you go hard at Real Madrid and criticize the shit, I don't know if I can cuss on here, but criticize the crap out of Florentino Perez or Ancelotti or whatever, that mad crap on them, you won't be excommunicated from the entire ecosystem.
Yeah, they don't own it.
You can just go and work for Barcelona or Espanyol or Betis or whatever. Like, there's no problem whatsoever. But here, if you dare say anything that hits the underlying structure of it all, the system, then you're blackballed and they can blackball you. And basically your livelihood is, there's the sword of Damocles hanging over you.
Yeah. I feel like there's a maximum about that, right? If you want to know who really controls you, ask yourself who you can't criticize, something along those lines. I don't remember. I'm butchering it, but I agree. Like if they are the sole gatekeepers and you go after them, they can cut you off, right? And I think you see this with coaches. I think you see it with players. I think you see it with even the media, right? You kind of talked about some of the independent creators. So for me, like this isn't my day job. Coaching soccer isn't, I run this club for free for my kids and their friends. So you can't hurt me, right?
Yeah.
But like not everybody's in that spot. Not everybody has that ability. And so people that are dependent on the money flowing down to them, once they bump up against that glass ceiling that you reference, they have to then make a choice, right? Am I going to just stop and find something else, or am I going to join up and play the game, right? And so I think you see so many people in American soccer that are so well-intentioned that they want to grow the game locally. They just can't. They're out of options, right? And so they kind of get stuck in this middle land where it's like, I'll keep paying the bills or I'm just going to stop. And that kind of sucks. That takes all the energy out of the sport and it makes it so sterile.
Yeah. And it doesn't, you actually don't have to be making money to end up complying. You may just very well want to be part of the group or have it get attention. Or maybe one day you want to have the option of maybe working in soccer, being a media guy or a journalist. So you don't have to be getting any money at the moment and still choose the route of compliance. Yeah. And I think a lot of folks do that. The other thing I want to mention, which ties into Greg Berhalter here is, and ties in nicely with what you just said, is in large part, I think that remarkable people with a lot of capability can't tolerate putting up with the bullshit. So they can't actually, their souls won't actually allow them to choose option B, which is compliance and bowing down and being the yes man, because then you can't actually do your art. You can't do your work. You choose that path. And so there's a natural filtering process then that happens here in the States where those particular folks, and like you said, I think they exist in pockets out there, they actually never make it because they can't just bow down and enter the gates and do what they're told. And so I have it from very good sources from years ago, Kirk, that the reason that Marcelo Bielsa was not hired as the men's national team coach, this was before Jurgen was hired, okay?
Okay, yeah. This is like after Bob Bradley.
Yes.
Okay.
Is because he would not agree to U.S. soccer's terms, which are, you know, he's notorious for this. Everybody knows this internationally. He has his crew that work with him, and he also wants total control and absolute power. And if you don't give that to him, he's out. And there have been instances at clubs where he has lasted 3 weeks or 5 weeks or something, because once he got into the job, you know, the club reneged on its promises that he would be in control and all the, and they try to push players on him to sign or to get rid of or whatever. He's like, you know what? Fuck it. I'm out.
Yeah.
I'm gone. And so that is really the true story. Again, I didn't hear from Bielsa's mouth, right? All I can say is I have my sources and I believe it just because I know how these people operate. That's why we didn't hire Bielsa. It wasn't because he couldn't speak English, okay? That is a kind of a post hoc rationale or requirement or excuse that's floated out there. which is not a good look either, but people have been clinging on to, oh, that's why he wasn't hired. That's not why he wasn't hired.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think that one specifically too came up with Tata as well, right?
Yeah.
Where there's like pretty good evidence that that was one of the reasons that they didn't go with Tata. Mm-hmm. Like, again, mind-blowing. Just a criminal, really. But they, like, U.S. soccer does want yes men. They want guys that are going to toe the line. I think they learned the wrong lesson with Klinsmann, where Klinsmann came in and said, everybody get out of MLS, go to Europe, go test yourself, go see where you are, right? Got mad at Dempsey and Bradley and Altidore for coming back too early and left Landon Donovan off the World Cup roster because he took a year-long sabbatical and said, bro, you weren't even here for qualifiers. You're not coming. I don't care. And so he ruffled all the wrong feathers, right? Got out of the group of death in 2014. That's like the media's words, not mine, right?
Yeah.
Lost kind of a squeaker to Belgium, went to the semifinal, did exactly what Jesse Marsh just did. And Jesse Marsh has received a ton of credit from U.S. pundits. Like, oh my God, we should have hired Jesse. Like, you had somebody the last cycle that did the same thing. Took a bad loss to Costa Rica. Things weren't going right in World Cup qualifying. I don't care if you fired Jurgen Klinsmann. I don't care. But his message is what really got him axed, right? If Greg had been delivering that same kind of message and had the World Cup performance that he did, he would have been gone. The day after the Netherlands game. The day after. The Gio Reyna thing would have never happened because he would have been disinvited from all his little Harvard Business School speaking engagements immediately, right? He's just propped up because he was singing the right tune. Anyway, sorry, that was a bit of a tirade.
No. And they're going to try to get somebody like Greg in, whether it's Wilfred Nancy, which they've been trying to build up his profile to be of the national team caliber sort of thing. They've been doing that for months. The media hasn't. Look, credit to the guy. He did great work with the Columbus Crew. He's been beating some Mexican teams. All great stuff. Fantastic. But that doesn't mean anything, Kirk, at the international level and in the grand scheme of things. I mean, you've seen it there with LAFC yourself. You know, Bob Bradley did great work at LAFC and then left and went to Toronto. And I mean, it was the Titanic at Toronto.
It was bad. It was bad.
Okay. Yeah. So what does that say about Bob Bradley then? I mean, he was doing great at LAFC. Right. Steve Cherundolo, laying an egg every week at Las Vegas Light. Disaster. The worst in the league. Mm-hmm. Okay. And then gets hired on as the LAFC first team coach. And look, winning titles, being among the best in the league. Okay. So was he a bad coach at Las Vegas Lights? And he's a good coach now. Was he a good coach there, but with a terrible roster, and a bad coach now, but he has a great roster? Like, these are the sorts of things that are very difficult to judge in Major League Soccer because of the enforced parity sort of situation and a lot of the, for lack of a better term again, manipulation that goes on at the league level to help certain franchises in certain ways and kind of not help others in different ways depending on how things are going in the public sphere. It's very hard to judge who is good and who isn't good. And in my opinion, from an expert's view, and I'm not saying I'm an expert, but I'm saying in theory, even from an expert's view, unless you're there looking at training sessions and seeing how the interactions are happening and seeing what was the actual game plan going into a game and how it was rehearsed and were the individual players really trained to execute a certain game plan and then how did it actually go during the match and do that for an entire season long, it's very difficult to judge the quality of a manager,
right,
in my opinion.
No, and I think this bumps up against something else that I kind of wanted to get into as well. This idea that, like, you don't really know what they're trying to do all the time, right? We can talk about, oh, they're in a 4-3-3, but they have a 4-3-3 where the six drops in between the center backs as opposed to one that's going to do whatever, right? They're a 4-3-3 that pushes their interior midfielders higher and their fullbacks tuck in alongside the holding mid, right? That's how they play. There's a million different ways that you could play a single formation, but, like, you don't know what they're actually trying to do in the final third and what specific combinations and, like, sequences of passes that they're trying to do to set up the right goal. I mean, and what it bumps up against is this idea that, like, well, we just look at the XG, right? And for me, this is one of the like the biggest problems that I had with Greg is bad result would come in and he'd sit up at the table during a press conference and be like, well, our XG was way better. So I don't know what you guys are talking about, right? He justified bad results with XG as if like that's the end all be all. This is something that, so going back to LAFC in Bob Bradley's last year, their XG was off the charts and their XG differential was off the charts, but they were losing all the time. And me and Josh, my co-host, we would come on every week and be like, look, we don't care how many quality chances you have. Like you don't have players that can put those chances away. So it doesn't matter, right? Mm-hmm. You're creating the wrong types of chances for your player profiles. And it's like this thing in American soccer where the player profiles are jacked up all the time, right? We don't know what an interior midfielder looks like. We don't know what a false nine actually looks like. And we just say, well, the XG is good. So in the long run, it's going to work out. And what happened that year with LAFC? They missed the playoffs. And thank God they fired Bob Bradley as a result. Like, that's the lowest of bars in like all of sports, missing the playoffs in MLS. Like, you should be automatically fired. No questions asked. But there are still people arguing, well, the XG differential is good. And so this gets to where I was headed with this is I feel like so many journalists in American soccer rely on statistics alone because they might not know the game or they don't have access to training sessions or whatever it is, right? It's all statistics. It's Matt Turner. The best example of this that I can think of, Gary, is a couple years ago, there was an article about Matt Turner being a world-class goalkeeper because he keeps his feet closer together, right? There's a big article in The Athletic. Okay. And so he's an elite, he's a world-class shot stopper because he keeps his feet close enough together so he can jump farther. Like, this is the analysis that's coming out. And then they say, well, he moved to Arsenal, so there's your confirmation bias, right? You got the move, what are you talking about? And then like a couple years later, we're all like, oh, maybe this is a bit overblown, right? What's your take on like soccer media vying for access, using what I see as a lot of faulty statistics for like propping up narratives?
Ooh, a lot to unpack.
There is a lot. Sorry.
A lot. I'll try to focus in on what comes to mind and then maybe you can corral me in different areas.
Yeah.
Number one, what you see in the media again is a direct consequence of MLS being a monopoly. Because if you want access at that level and make a living off of quote unquote journalism or reporting or whatever, well, you can't go against the monopoly. Yeah. They'll just blackball you and excommunicate you. And it's not like, oh, okay, cool. I'll just report on Colorado Rapids instead of LAFC. Right. No, you're out. You're out.
Okay? Your access is cut off. Yeah.
It's over. And so since they don't, and with all, I guess there is no respect. I was going to say with all due respect, if you don't have any soccer knowledge, deep soccer knowledge intrinsically yourself, then you rely on access. You rely on the status of those that you speak to get attention,
right?
Readership and viewership. So if you lose that, you're done. It's not like you're going to start a Substack or a blog or a podcast and anybody's going to pay attention to you rambling on about soccer,
right,
without having access to pro players, pro coaches, nothing. And so there's this natural filtration or culling process that happens. And what you see today, those who are the journalists or the media or anybody who has access or platform, they're all compromised. Number one, that's first and foremost. Number two, if you don't know about football, you're kind of stuck Googling and Wikipediaing and going to Transfer Market or going to Opta or looking at all these sorts of data points to tell a story with, because you can't protect yourself in any other way. You have to be able to say, well, look, my story is valid or has some sort of credence because look at the XG.
Right.
Or the XA, it correlates with what I'm trying to tell you. And if for some reason those statistics or numbers don't correlate with the story that they have been telling for a very long time, then they just don't tell the story.
Yeah.
So it's just a narrative by omission or
selection bias, right?
Yeah. Or obfuscating the pursuit of truth or the truth by just simply not telling the other side of the story. So I don't know. Those are the two things that directly come to mind there about the media.
Yeah, I think that's where I see a lot of the frustration too, is as fans start to realize, or like specifically with this version of the USMNT, right? We'll ignore Greg's first World Cup term. And like you said, rehiring was 10 times worse because you already knew what you were getting. You knew you were getting a leadership disaster. You knew you were getting very average management, right? And you just did it anyway. You had the perfect out. And you just look at this, like that's where I think most of the frustration comes is when he was rehired, you have who me and Josh refer to as state media, right? The MLS programming. You have them out there selling you this bill of goods, telling you, well, actually, Greg's been fantastic. Look at all the trophies he's won. But they'll never mention the fact that like they had a lot of close calls against Jamaica and against like the worst generation of Mexican players you've ever even heard of. Like, it's amazing how poor Mexico have been lately.
And they qualified below Mexico.
They qualified on goal differential. But I mean, they could have easily been left out of the World Cup again. And Greg was rehired. And it's like, no. Look at all these trophies. Don't you guys like beating Mexico? What's your problem? Shut up, fans. You guys are so toxic, right? And everybody's standing there looking at each other like, are they not watching the same thing we are? We see it. We see the players not able to connect passes, not able to score goals, especially away. We see the fact that like anytime they play away from the U.S., they are abysmal. We see them give up a late penalty to Wales. We see them struggle against Iran even, right? We see a 0-0 draw against England. And like, okay, right. He played a 4-4-2 mid block. Southgate wasn't expecting that. Fair result. And then we see them pimp that out as if it's like the second coming of Bielsa, right? But ultimately, it's just like a meh result. So I think that's where the frustration really comes from is like fans are being told, shut up and just watch and spend money. And what you're seeing is actually good. It's like, it's almost Orwellian, right? You're being told not to see what you're seeing.
Yeah, they condescend to
the
fans.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Even as recent as the friendly against Brazil, when they got obliterated by Colombia, okay? And then obviously there was an outcry by the fan base, like, get rid of this guy, what's going on? Then they get a quote-unquote result against Brazil, 1-1. The media immediately switched back to the narrative like, oh, big turnaround, massive.
Yeah,
this
yeah.
shows the maturity of the team. Greg, you know, trained them up. Like, that wasn't that long ago.
Yeah.
What was that, a month ago? I don't even know.
Yeah, yeah. And it is frustrating. And it is frustrating to watch them create narratives in real time and try and all stick to it, right?
And the fans should learn, hopefully, this cycle that not only do they have power over the Federation and MLS, they have power over the media as well. Because I think two things happened after the Uruguay loss. The media finally realized it's unsustainable.
Yeah.
They can't keep lying,
yep.
straight, bold-faced lying to the public. The public isn't going to buy it anymore.
Yeah. So let's put some names out there. Not to call anybody out, but Alexi Lalas, everybody knows him and pretty much feels the same way, right? I see him as the Ric Flair of U.S. soccer commentary. He's doing a bit all the time. Like, he wants to be the heel. Even Alexi, who was like the most bald eagle thumping guy in the media in 2021, was saying if Greg, I think it was a before a match against Canada in World Cup qualifying, like, this is it. This is the last stand. And it was a squeaker of a result. And then he shut up for a long time. And then as soon as Greg lost against Panama, he's back in. Right now that it's safe, now that it's safe to criticize again, I'm going to come out and I'm going to go full force. But like, that's years of fan engagement and like gaslighting to the fans of like, no, you guys are toxic. You guys suck. Just shut up. Shut up and just enjoy it. Right. And then as soon as that mask is finally ripped off, then it's like, okay, well, now I'll go after it. Right. And he's the first one through the door and has the most scathing commentary. And I see that as so dishonest because I know he saw it for the past 3 years because he's commenting on all the games.
He can't be that. He's not dumb.
Yeah.
He's not dumb.
Right.
Or
none
when
of them are.
Or when he was trying to make an argument back in the day about, well, how do you really know if Greg's not as good as, if not better than Guardiola?
Right.
You know? So they're actually saying these sorts of things. And, right. you know, this is why they go after the MLS, right? Why MLS is target demographic in general, I know there are exceptions, in general, is the new soccer fan, the first generation soccer fan, the soccer fan that doesn't necessarily have a long history or culture with the sport. Because let's just be honest here, it's harder for that customer to discern fact from fiction. If you're listening to Alexi Lalas, like, you know, oh, that sounds perfectly logical. Yeah, Guardiola hasn't coached in a parity enforced league. So how do you actually know? He's always had the best players. Oh, that makes total sense. Yeah, you have a point there, Alexi. You know, like
the internal logic is sound, right?
You know, yeah, the logic. Well, that's how the media has gotten away with a lot of the brainwashing is because everything is logical. There's a rationale to all of it, you know, and it's supported in many cases by selective data picking, plucking.
back to the statistics, right? Using statistics to tell your narrative.
Yeah. So, you know, it's hard for the new soccer fan to discern what's right and wrong. And that's why they always have this campaign of growing the sport. Let's get the new people in here. The people who have always watched baseball or hockey or football. Let's try to get those groups in here because they'll buy the bullshit. And I'll say the following before I shut up. Alexi, I don't so much blame because he's not positioning himself as a journalist.
Yeah.
And it's the ones I really have a beef with are the ones that position themselves, if not explicitly, but even implicitly as objective news sources or journalists. Those are the ones I have a beef with because their charter is speaking truth to power, right? And pursuing the truth. And so you are in direct violation of that. So for me, it's an ethical, moral imperative at that point.
Right.
Alexi Lalas, fine. Be the court jester, whatever. And I think a lot of folks see through it. It's the others that really irk me, man.
We'll pull a specific example here, right? There are a lot of those journalists out there who I just want to be up and down, just want to report the facts. I'm just working a beat here, right? I'm going to write about the sport, whatever. But it takes fans to go onto the U.S. Soccer website and start digging through the board members and their histories and to be like, hey, did anybody notice that Don Garber's 5 terms over his term limit?
Right.
Like, why? That's 10 years that he's been over the limit to be on the USSF board. And I don't think I've ever seen a story about that. I've just seen tweets from fans.
Yeah.
Like, hey, can you guys look into this? Can you guys, like, maybe? Could you guys do some investigative reporting and figure out why it is? The only thing it says on the website is that employees of the organization are allowed to serve over their term limit. So there's two conclusions that you can draw there, right? One is that Don Garber is an employee of USSF, which is a massive conflict of interest, considering that he runs the league for the owner operators of all the franchises, right? Or two, which is equally bad, is that USSF just says, eh, we don't care. Just like they did when MLS said, we're not going to abide by the pro league standards and we're going to pull out of the Open Cup. We don't care. What are you going to do? We don't care. So how is it that these journalists who, again, are supposed to speak truth to power and see themselves, and I think this is a problem with our media in general, not just U.S. soccer media. How is it that you can see such naked corruption, corruption. That's really the word for it. And just be like, meh, I got a transfer rumor for you fed to me by MLS. So I'm going to report that.
What's also interesting, man, is that this sort of investigative reporting or that these sorts of stories would actually attract a lot of attention and viewership and clicks. Yeah. And it would be good for whatever media entity that they're working for, whether it be Soccer America, The Athletic, you name it, it'd be very good for them business-wise, and yet they don't do it.
Yeah.
That is also quite telling. It would be one thing if they said, nobody cares about this. They should still do it, even if people didn't care about it. But it would be one thing saying nobody cares about this, so that's why I don't report on it or do the work to report on it. But that's actually not true.
Yeah, but that's the tail wagging the dog, right? Mm. Which is the whole problem with MLS and USSF in the first place, right? If you're saying I'm going to abdicate my responsibility to speak truth to power just because nobody cares, then it's like, all right, well, like, why are you a journalist? Why are you pretending to do this then?
I go down that path as well sometimes. And I'm like, how do these people look at themselves in the mirror at times? I wouldn't be able to do it. I'd be living a lie. Maybe, I don't know, maybe they've convinced themselves otherwise.
I don't know.
I saw the other day, Jimmy Conrad, ex-US men's national team player, has his own sort of show. You know, I never listened to it, but I know of it.
Yeah.
He brought on, quote unquote, journalist, Doug McIntyre, who, lo and behold, is the one that broke the news. Greg fired a couple hours ago.
Yeah.
He brought on Doug McIntyre, I don't know if it was yesterday or 2 days ago, to talk about Greg and or who are potential good candidates for the U.S. Men's National. Like, I'm sorry, why are you asking a reporter or journalist about their soccer opinions? I understand this happens all the time. You're asking journalists what their opinion is of X, Y, or Z. Sure, cool. But they're not an expert. They are not practitioners in the space.
Yeah.
What the fuck do you know? Who gives a fuck,
you're
about your opinion of the national team coach and who's qualified and who's not qualified, or tactics here, or results there. Yeah. Like, give me a break, man. Doug or any of these guys are the last people you should be platforming, last people you should be asking their opinions.
To your point about Alexi not being a journalist, like, that's the question for Alexi. Even though you know it's going to be a trollish thing, right? That's the one you ask. Yeah.
You want to ask a journalist something and their opinions actually matter? Ask them about what is their writing style? How do they converge on their writing style? How long does it take them to write a piece? You know, how do they cultivate their sources? You know,
or information, some inside baseball, right? Wrong. Whatever. I hate mixed sports metaphors.
Whatever. Don't ask them about their opinion about a domain I'm going off the rails here, but it's kind of like asking somebody who reports on medicine or the healthcare industry or something. Hey, what do you think about this new cancer treatment? I'm like, what?
Ask an oncologist. That's what I think.
Know about our new cancer treatment.
Oh, man, that's good. I like it. Maybe we should give the journalists a rest here. But kind of going along with this, like, knowing the game, knowing player profiles, over-reliance on statistical models to drive your narrative. I wanted to ask you, because we keep hearing about golden generation, and what I keep seeing from a lot of personalities in the media, we'll just call them that to encompass all the pundits and the journalists, is stop calling it a golden generation, which is something I'm fine with. I think there are a handful of players who are more talented than we've ever seen before. I think there are players who are benefiting from this kind of like renaissance that the US has had, where MLS was forced, possibly by you and Brian, to start selling players and signing them to favorable contracts, as opposed to just watching them walk to Europe on their own. And so you have a lot of players in Europe that are bit players, right? It's Tyler Adams injured for a long time. It's Brendan Aaronson bouncing from club to club to club to club. Even Pulisic, when he was at Chelsea, wasn't doing much, right? And then he gets the right move, and now it's like, boom, he's back, right? Tim Weah is no longer a right winger. Now he's like a wing back more. And so you see them playing roles, right? Weston McKennie, same thing. So what's your take on the player pool as it is now? And maybe a follow-on to that would be, what player profiles are we still missing to actually do what Greg pretended that he was going to do? That's a lot. Sorry.
Yeah, no, it's fine. As to the quality of the player pool, the way I view it is it's better than in the past. So I'll just rewind the tape all the way to 94, let's say. 94, 98, 2002 sort of time frame. Are the players now better than those players back then? Yes. But if the question is, are they better relative to their global counterparts? No.
Yeah.
They are basically at the same level. Mm-hmm. As Alexi was, as Tab was, as Reyna was back then, as Ernie Stewart was, basically the same. Something else that comes to mind is, again, I'll bring up my heritage and folks with similar experiences to me, whether it be Italian Americans or Croatians or Brazilians or whatever. For 20, 30 years or more, we've all seen and experienced and gone through so many cycles of Argentine players going to Europe and having ups and downs and being on different caliber teams, and dozens and dozens and hundreds of players we've seen. Okay. Yeah. As have the Portuguese, as have this everybody. And the US finally had this one injection of quantity of players going to Europe. And the broader fan base here is having their first ever experience with that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so they think it's something remarkable, you know. So when Pulisic goes to Chelsea, or, you know, gets played early as a teenager at Borussia Dortmund, or then gets sold to Milan and is having a very good moment in Milan, or McKennie or Tyler Adams, you name it, they think it's something so special.
Yeah.
Right? That it's natural for them to drift immediately and say golden generation. But for so many of us who have lived this for so long with Argentinians, Brazilians, Venezuelans, Colombians, you name it, Chileans.
Yeah. Yeah.
For us, we look at what these American players are doing overseas and we're like, mediocre.
Right.
Even Christian. And don't get me wrong, I think Christian is a phenomenal player. I tweeted in whatever it was, 2015 or 16, it's on record, that this is a special one. I think he was 16 years old. Yeah. I don't even know if he had debuted on Dortmund yet. Okay. So I think extremely highly of him. But in the context that I just laid out, it's kind of like, okay, all right, not bad.
He's a solid starting caliber player on a lot of Champions League teams.
Awesome.
Right?
Awesome.
That's awesome.
And Thor, hundreds of other players.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's where I am, is it's like, now you're starting to see a crop up too. Like, all these guys need to come back, and we need to stop sending players to Europe because they're not getting playing time. And it's like, how do you think these players are made? How do you think that all these guys that you watch in Champions League, where, like, how do you think it is that they get to this point? It's the constant grind and the constant pressure that they're under, not only like in their club situation just to get minutes at their position, but also the entire team to fight off relegation, to push for promotion, right? It kind of boggles my mind that it's like, well, that didn't really work out the way we wanted it to, so we're just going to give up. And now Weston McKennie should come play for Cincinnati, right? It's like, no, that kid needs to stay over there. It didn't go well for him in Leeds. He had to fight for a spot back at Juve. He had an okay season after that. And now he should continue to fight for it rather than take some payout. And to be fair, in like the general conversation about American soccer, where it's like, it's easy to take that money and just be like, you know what? I'll take $10 million to come back. I'd have a hard time saying no to that, Gary. But like, if we want to graduate as a national team, our players have to stick it out over there, and they can't just be coddled by MLS to come back and eat a bunch of Skyline chili and collect fat paycheck.
No, or graduate as a fan base. You know,
Yeah. We
have to acknowledge these things. And we also have to acknowledge, look, when I first heard the rumor about McKennie and coming back to MLS or something, I wasn't shocked. I wasn't shocked because they're pulling from the same script that they did with Jurgen and bringing Clint Dempsey back and Michael Bradley back and Jozy Altidore back right before the World Cup, bring them back so that then it's all a marketing campaign for Major League Soccer.
Landon Donovan was saying Pulisic should come back. Like, Landon has got to shut his mouth, man.
Well, there's intent. It shows that intent
there is
behind it. It's naked to many of us because we know the incentives behind the machine. And those are the incentives. They want to be able to say, we have 15 MLS players on the national team, and they made a quarterfinal, semifinal run in the 2026 World Cup.
Yeah.
That's the goal.
Yep. Which is an absurd goal. Even if it were a golden generation, it was absurd for Greg to ever say, we're going to make a semi, right? Like, that's not where this team is. Like, win a knockout game. Let's start there, U.S. soccer. Do what you have to win a knockout game.
Did he say that, Kirk? I don't recall.
Yeah, so when they came back, it was kind of coded, but it was made very clear. Both he and Crocker were saying, we're going to take this to new levels. We're going to reach places that we haven't reached before. And there was a lot of reporting around it that, like, all the subtext was, like, semis in 2026, which, again, is silly. Like, win a knockout game.
Yeah. It's interesting because I think home field really matters a lot.
Yeah.
World Cups, if you look at it historically, even that 94 group when we were here, that 94 group eliminated Colombia. They beat, and Colombia was basically the favorite to win the 1994 World Cup.
Yeah.
They had come in blasting Argentina 5-0 in Buenos Aires.
That's
how this team was arriving. And the U.S. won 1-0. And if you look at like South Korea and Japan, those World Cups happened over there, they can go far, man. They can go far. Possibility, but I'm glad he's gone.
I think that's why it's so important that the change had to be made, because you're blowing a massive opportunity to do something special. And again, something special is winning a knockout game. Like, that's something special.
By the way, I hope I'm wrong, man, but I have like a 99% hit rate on being right with these things. They're gonna bring in another yes man MLS guy, somebody who has ties to MLS to be the coach, because that also goes hand in hand with what we just finished saying. If they were to bring like a Jurgen Klopp or Mauricio Pochettino or some foreigner, and the foreigner is the one that gets them to the quarters or the semis in the World Cup, then how do they reverse course from that moving forward? How do they keep control of the biggest platform, narrative generating platform that is the men's national team, if it's a foreigner that is at the podium
doing it their way,
not our way.
Yeah. I do think that's a problem. I think it's a big impediment to them making the right hire. For me, obviously Klopp is the biggest fish out there to get, right? And I think anybody would be happy to get him. Can it happen? Maybe. I mean, stranger things have happened in this sport than the U.S. hiring Klopp. Is it likely? I don't know. But there are other guys, like, I mean, so you talked about Pochettino, right? I would love to see even Irv Renard, who's somebody that's done special things in the World Cup, right? Who's just this kind of like international mercenary who would come in and clean it up. Yergi Löw is still out there. Marcelo Gallardo might be my favorite.
Yeah, I agree.
One to bring in, right? Just an absolute killer. But you're going to face all that same stuff that you did with Bielsa, where it's like he's not tame, right? So, on anybody else that you think they should take a run at?
I cracked a joke, but it was only half joking. I really think that anybody outside the U.S. without any ties is fine. I would take a Polish coach who's coaching in the second division of Norway, okay? Yeah. And I will be absolutely happy and elated. And I kid you not, I'm dead serious. And it doesn't mean that somebody with that sort of pedigree or profile isn't good. Yeah. There are great managers and great coaches coaching at every level of the pyramid internationally. Everybody has to get their start and their big break somehow. I just think that, and Hernán Gallardo, interestingly enough, there's an MLS connection there. I don't think that he would be beholden to MLS in any way. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah,
like Gallardo will speak his mind. He won't give a shit. But at least the league would be able to say, ooh, Gallardo played for MLS.
DC, you know, played at DC, right?
God, you got me there, man. I'd have to look it up.
Yeah, but that's enough of a tenuous connection where it's like.
But they can stretch it, man. They have an army of media Muppets that'll help them amplify the signal for sure.
Absolutely.
But I'll be happy with anybody, man. My worst nightmare, though, is this Wilfred Nancy guy or Shurundalo. You're there at LAFC. Is that a possibility?
I think it is. I don't love it. I think Tarundolo came into a good situation, into a good system under Bradley that was a bit overextended, and he pulled them back. He was able to rein them in some very specific ways and kind of fix it. And that's when they won their title, right? And then in the next year, got really into just counterattacking through Denny Bawanga. And that was it. That was all they could do, is just direct to Bawanga, see what, and it's like, it was like watching youth soccer, honestly. Hoof it long to Denny and see what happens, right? And that still got them through another MLS Cup where they lost to Nancy. And the beginning of the year seemed to be the same thing. And they've now reversed course, and like they're holding onto the ball a lot better. But it's like you said, it's hard to know where that comes from. Is that Ante Razov on the staff? Is that Mark Dos Santos? Like, who is that? Is it Tarundolo that's doing it? Is it John Thorington being like, bro, you're going to fix this or you're gone? You just don't know, right? I don't know that I've seen enough from him. I would love to see like an extended period of success, or maybe like go back to Europe. But
no, but aside from his like qualifications, I guess I was asking more, do you see that happening? Like, will they just hire him? Will he be released from his contract at LAFC? Will he, you know, how does that potentially work?
So going back to the Doug McIntyre comments, he was the one that floated him first. He said Klopp or Dolo, right? Mm-hmm. And I think they would. I think they would release him. And I mean, just like you saw with Greg, we all knew in the summer that he was going to be hired. And then they waited till the end of the MLS season for him to go. And then he joined the team in December. So I wouldn't doubt it at all, just for LAFC to release him. I mean, it's a big thing for LAFC too, right? To be able to say, oh, look, he came here, and next thing you know, he's coaching in a World Cup on home soil, right? Yeah. So it's a point of pride, but.
Yeah, that's what's going to happen, isn't it? God damn it. And the fan base just isn't there yet to get ahead of it.
Yeah.
To get ahead of it, because if the fan base got ahead of it right now, like, we don't want this guy or this guy or this guy, the Federation / MLS will bend the knee and they will not get him. They will not get those guys. But the fan base doesn't see it. They don't think two steps ahead. They don't see the chessboard yet.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, maybe he'd be brilliant, but I haven't seen it yet. So it's hard for me to risk the 26 World Cup on it.
Question for you, because I imagine that you've heard press conferences with him, post-match interviews or whatever, since you cover the team. And I don't track it, to be honest. Does he have the character to say inconvenient truths with the national team platform?
He does. There are times where it comes off like excuse making, but everybody does that, right? But he has, especially when it comes to like CONCACAF Champions League, he would go directly after the league for like we are unable to compete. Like, I'm sorry. We don't have the personnel for it. There's too many fixtures. Like, there's too many fixtures for us to be running out these lineups all the time. Like, I think last year they played close to 60 matches with this shoestring roster, right? And so he's been pretty outspoken about that. So to me, that's encouraging. The fact that he would go after not just the franchise, but the league itself, right? The hand that actually feeds him and signs his checks. Like, he would go after them as well. And like, hey, this system needs to be improved if you want us to do the things you want us to do. So there's a glimmer of hope there. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Because that's really all I care about, is that somebody has that the biggest narrative generating podium in American soccer, yeah, and uses it to go after what I think is the most important, which is with topics that open more opportunities for everybody in the game.
Yeah.
That's my hope. And if it is Trundolo, obviously I'm going to be very unhappy because of his connection with MLS, but I'm going to try to cling on to a tiny shred of hope that, you know, with his history in Germany, that even if MLS were to blackball him, he feels confident enough and comfortable enough and open to the idea of leaving the United States and getting a job elsewhere. Because that's right. What it really comes down to is how dependent are you on your livelihood here in the U.S.?
There was one more thing that I wanted to ask, and it kind of goes into this. So one of my big problems with MLS is their reliance, or MLS managers, is their reliance on MLS players. Now, this is something that even Klinsmann did, right? Klinsmann called in Jordan Morris when he was still at Stanford. Something that I'm like, yes, that's a guy who can identify talent, right? It's not his fault that Jordan Morris stayed in MLS too long. I feel like MLS coaches, because we have this thing in January that everybody calls Camp Cupcake, while all the Europeans are actually playing and they bring in these MLS players, they get so comfortable with players that they see week in and week out around the league that they just never let go of them. So you have guys like Aaron Long and Christian Roldan and Daniel Lovitz just hanging around the national team forever when they shouldn't be. How much of a concern is that whole setup to you? This fact that like the league is on a different schedule and it takes forever to get rid of these guys just because coaches get comfortable.
No, it's a huge concern, not only for that reason, but also for the transfer market. It's a huge concern because here, you know, when Europe is in the off season, which is right now, MLS is in mid season, and it complicates matters so much to get business done. And then vice versa also for the winter transfer window. Okay, so players are free here in the United States, MLS players in the winter transfer window. Well, it's usually a bad idea to join a team in Europe in the middle of their season. It's hard to break into the team. And let me just put it to you that way. So, and further, European clubs, since they are under real pressure week in and week out, they are looking for players that will solve their immediate problem.
Yeah.
Immediate problem, not a project, not somebody that, okay, well, you know, 6 months from now or 3 months from now, he'll acclimatize and we'll integrate him and we see him as somebody very important. But no, they're looking for what's our solution tomorrow.
Drop them in.
For MLS players, you basically lose an entire transfer window in that regard. So that ultimately harms the national team as well, because you need as many possible players in the pool to be overseas, frankly speaking.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, any other parting shots or?
Man, I'm trying to be, it's hard to be super diplomatic and all that sort of stuff. I really want to be diplomatic and not be so brash and bold when I communicate these things and be more professional, if that's the right word. I want to be more stoic like Marcelo Bielsa in his conferences and things of that nature. The problem is that doesn't hit very hard or impact very hard when there isn't a culture ready to receive that kind of delivery, you know?
Right.
So in many ways, and maybe this is me rationalizing, in many ways, I feel like I have to be that guy, so that it creates a space for folks to be more stoic and deliver the message in a much better diplomatic way, you know?
I think there's something to be said about that. This idea that you could be out in the vanguard, right? And that it provides a lot of cover for everybody else to clean.
Yeah. I mean, again, I might be rationalizing this because I don't know. But at the same time, I think there is a need for that person to create the space for others. If I talk so much shit and go so out there on left field, and then somebody comes in and says not as crazy of things as I do, that person seems sane and they'll listen to them. They'll listen to them. They'll listen.
That's awesome. Well, I thank you for the public service then.
Oh my God. We all want to be helpful or view ourselves as the good guys. And yeah. I think I'm no exception to that. I like to think that I'm one of the good guys fighting the good fight. But again, everybody probably feels the same way about their own situation.
I do think so. And I think the culture of soccer in America is very much that, right? Everybody wants to see it succeed. We have different ideas on how it is. And sometimes we have really not violent, but outspoken disagreements about like, no, it's the culture needs to be let the kids play, just free play all the time. Let them do that and they'll be creative. Or, you know, no, it needs to be a better club system and we have to be more regimented, in fact, right? And so we get in these lanes and these silos, we stop talking to each other. And so each of us just takes one piece of the pie. So we become more and more federated over time.
And by the way, compared to Argentinian media or Marca in Spain or whatever, I'm a docile little weakling the way I speak. I'm nothing.
A Cocker Spaniel. Yeah.
Totally. I'm a Labrador Retriever, man.
All right. Well, Gary, thank you so much for coming on. This is an awesome conversation. And I hope all the listeners enjoy it and that maybe in the future we'll have some more conversations around these topics as well. But thank you so much for coming on. If you are a soccer coach, I can't recommend the 343 coaching program enough. It will help you graduate as a coach. I've seen it with my own teams and in the club that I run. So thank you for that as well, Gary.
Thanks, brother.
Well, that's it for today, guys. Thank you for listening. A reminder for coaches. You can get both the free and premium coaching programs at 343coaching.com. Don't let anyone tell you your teams can't win by playing dominant possession-based football while also developing individual players to the highest levels. Nonsense. We've proved it at every single level, and so have hundreds of serious member coaches across the country. Now that we've moved on to the pro level, we're delivering everything we've learned in the program. Don't wait and continue delaying getting on a proven path. And parents, 343masterclass.com is where you want to go to get a working compass for navigating the American soccer landscape with your player. It's pretty bad out there, but let our experience guide you. Lastly, if you're coaching 7v7, we've got you covered there as well. Go to 7v7coaching.com. Until next time, cheers everyone, and keep building.